Hello, Bushwick. You're listening to The Farm Report. I'm Jack Inslee with my lovely co-host, Heather Hyman. And we are here live at 5, as usual. And today we have been brought to you by Edwards of Surrey, Virginia, a good friend of the network. The Edwards family has joined Heritage Foods USA and Newman Berkshire Farm to develop an all-natural product line featuring Suriano hams, Berkshire smoked slice and slab bacon, and Berkshire smoked sausage links. These new products are produced exclusively from purebred, six-spotted Berkshire pigs raised completely outdoors on independent family farms. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. For more information about S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, visit www.edwardsvaham.com. And Heather, who do we have on the line today?
We have Mr. Tom Mylan of the Meat Hook in Brooklyn, New York. Tom, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
We are doing very well, thanks. Happy to have you on the show.
So great to be on.
We had to do some detective work to get your phone number. You gave us the wrong one there, but...
Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry.
We just thought you didn't want to come on today, but it's all good.
Yeah, we figured it out.
We tracked you down.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ben. All right, anyway, Tom, why don't you give us a little background on how you got started as a butcher and, became owner of the Meat Hook?
Short answer is I got drafted. I was working for Marlowe and Sons and Diner and doing a bunch of like sort of special projects, fun weird stuff, making cheese and like doing a cheese program there and helping write and edit their magazine and get that off the ground. And, it was fun, but I was getting a little bored.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that they wanted to bring in whole animals. The butcher shop that they had been buying stuff through, Fleischer's in Kingston,
nice.
Basically had told them that they weren't going to sell them small pieces of animals anymore. And if they wanted beef or pork, they were going to have to take its hanging weight, which is in, great big giant pieces.
I'm sorry, what was the word you just used?
Hanging weight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
So that they were going to need a butcher, and they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I didn't really even think about it, and I said yes. And that's kind of the kind of short story. Like it was sort of an accident.
Okay, so
I should have probably thought about it a little bit longer.
So you went from working with Marlowe and Sons and Diner to being in touch with the Fleischer's guys, who it sounds like they also have a farm.
No, they actually are a butcher shop that sources directly from farms and then provides transportation of that stuff down to the city.
Mm-hmm.
So after I said yes, I was sent up to apprentice with Josh and Aaron Lenz up at Fleischer's, and I, slept in their TV room with a huge bull mastiff named Boo Boo and a giant African tortoise named Mo, and slept on a futon love seat for 6 weeks, and
boot camp.
Got, huh?
Boot camp.
Yeah, total butcher boot camp, and I was up there for 6 weeks, and that's just enough time to like learn enough stuff to make you kind of dangerous to yourself.
and to society.
Yeah, and I came back to the city and, spent 13 or 14 hours a day locked in the basement of the diner, butchering pigs and beef. And I, at that point, I was also butchering all the fish, and I had to, teach myself how to butcher fish by watching YouTube videos and stuff.
How much different, is it to butcher fish than it would meat?
It's a lot different, because most of the way that we tend to think of butchering, cutting steaks and stuff like that, is cutting across the bone, and most fish, you fillet, so you're running your knife like along the bone, and it's just a lot different. I go home every day smelling like, you know, beef and pork, but and no one really seems to mind it all that much. But when you go home smelling like fish, people are really not that happy. My wife wasn't really happy at all.
Yeah, I guess the only comparison I could see in my head between like the fish and like maybe a part of like the beef would be maybe some of the silver skin on a beef and then filleting a fish. Maybe that's the similarity there.
Right, yeah. Especially, you know, there's especially monkfish, which have like 14 layers of weird membranes and silver skin and stuff like that that you need to very delicately take off. Your knife has to be a lot sharper. You can get away with having a dull knife butchering beef. I mean, it's not a good idea. It'll give you sort of carpal tunnel, but you really can't butcher fish unless you have a really sharp knife. So that's another difference.
So you were bringing in whole cows to the diner basement. Is that what was going on for a minute?
We were bringing in big pieces, you know, hind legs and you know, half pigs. And then after about three months of butchering in the basement, they built a little shack behind the diner, a little refrigerated cubby hole. And I had a bandsaw on wheels, which is a really bad idea. I had a little cooler, and at that point we started bringing in one whole steer a week.
Wow.
And three pigs, and I basically just spent the whole week, you know, breaking those down for the restaurants and, you know, turning them into sausage and their, you know, various different cuts and trying to figure out like what to do with all the pig feet and with all the trotters and stuff that like that we didn't really know what to do with,
right,
in the restaurant. And so it was also a game of like problem solving. Like how do you run a restaurant? How do you as a butcher sort of like react to the fact that, you know, there's a lot of things like pig skin and, you know, feet and stuff like that, which like at least to you know, a standard straight ahead sort of like American, casual fine dining restaurant, like what do you do with this stuff? Like, how do you make it into a product that people will eat? And, you know, that was basically my job. And then that rolled into opening Marlow and Daughters, which was, or it still is, their butcher shop. And me and Brent, who's one of my partners at the Meat Hook, opened that place. And Brent brought up Ben, who's our third partner in the Meat Hook, from Richmond, Virginia. They're best friends in Richmond, and we ran that butcher shop and decided that we really liked running a butcher shop together, and we liked it so much that we, in fact, wanted to become partners and own our own butcher shop, which has led directly to the Meat Hook with a sort of like sort of side story, which is, you know, how that whole space got built, which was basically... Brent and I were teaching butchering and sausage making classes at the Brooklyn Kitchen at their former spot, which was really tiny, like 650 square feet. And I was, you know, out the winter before last with Harry, who is one of the owners of the Brooklyn Kitchen, and we were, you know, sitting at the bar of Roebling Tea Room, you know, getting kind of loose, and I was like, I don't really want to do this anymore the way that I'm doing it. I want to have my own shop. And he was like, well, we really want to like open a big teaching space.
Cool.
And he was like, why don't we like throw in together? And we were like, all right, let's do it. And, you know, a couple months later, we found this enormous 7,000 square foot space. And, you know, and we spent the whole summer getting it ready. And then we opened it the week before Thanksgiving.
And I will add, it's beautiful. You guys did a great job.
Thank you.
Now, what would you say makes the Meat Hook different from Marlow and Daughter? Or is it any different? Is it sort of the same spirit?
Oh, no, it's very different. I mean, like, I came up with a concept for Daughters, that we wanted to have this big, long case that was more like an actual like showcase. And, you know, I wanted to sort of communicate to people visually that we were a different kind of butcher shop, that we were a whole animal butcher shop. And so we set about merchandising it with like large, you know, like whole pig legs with a trotter on, and like, you know, pretty much everything that was in the case was not already cut up. And you know, it was great, and people really, like, when they see a, when they saw a pig head in the case, they knew what they were getting into. But it also, you know, when we decided to, you know, what the concept was going to be for the meat hook, we decided that, you know, ultimately, as fun as that, putting pig heads in the case and doing that kind of, like, that sort of thing was, it was ultimately a little off-putting and really not for everyone and a little intimidating. And we wanted to open a butcher shop that was, like, a mom-and-pop butcher shop from, like, the 1950s. We wanted to be really friendly and really inviting, and so we decided to go with, like, you know, old-fashioned cut cases and, you know, have everything, you know, cut in the case. I mean, not to say that we don't cut stuff custom order and do a lot of stuff like that, but we just wanted it to be more like, you know, like a friendly butcher shop that you don't have to, like, you know, suss out what the theme of it is, or, like, you know, what it's about, you know, or, like, why is it kind of like a butcher shop / horror show or something like that. So, and I mean, the other thing that's very different about the meat hook is that as compared to Marlin Daughters, I mean, Marlin Daughters, like, all the purchasing of all the animals is actually done by the owners of the shop and not by the actual butchers. And, you know, that got a little frustrating for us when we were working there. And we couldn't work exclusively with the farms that we wanted to work with, and we couldn't, like, keep out the stuff we thought was not so good. Not so good, in terms of quality, not really, like, in terms of, like, you know, animal husbandry or anything like that. And so, you know, the meat hook, we took the 26 or 27 farms that we had gotten animals from at Daughters and winnowed it down to 3.
Wow. So you sourced from 3 farms?
More or less. Yeah, pretty much most of our stuff comes from 3 farms. We have 2 beef producers and 1 pork producer. We're now in a process of actually having people custom raise things for us. So right now, we'll probably be bumping up to, like, maybe 8 or 10 farms as the next year and a half unfolds. But right now we have 8 pigs out at the Queens County Farm Museum that are being custom raised exclusively for us, and we're going to finish them on acorns, and, you know, you just have a lot.
Oh,
I mean,
yes, awesome.
I mean, well, yeah.
Does that mean that you're going to be making some ham, some prosciutto?
Yeah, we might make a Serrano or two out of those.
Yeah, you. That's awesome.
Well, we're actually, like, our passion right now, mm-hmm. where that lies is really in country ham. So we've been doing a lot of country ham.
Okay.
Instead of prosciutto, because I don't know, prosciutto is nice, but I mean, you have to slice it with a knife by hand if you do it on the bone, which is kind of the only way to really do
it. Yeah.
And it's very time consuming and it's very precious. And if there's one thing that the meat hook isn't, it's precious. Like,
okay.
You know,
keeping it raw.
I just think that there's ultimately more. It's more of, you know, who we are to, like, you know, sell country ham that, like, we make there, and, you know, cut people, like, ham steaks on a bandsaw than, like, you know, doing this very, like, European. You know, like, we're not Europeans, we're Americans. We make country ham.
Country ham, awesome. Well, speaking of country ham, we're gonna thank Edwards again for sponsoring us, and we're gonna take one quick break. Tom, we'll be right back with you. Stay on the line.
So.
You're listening to the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. And we're back. You're listening to The Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. Today we are produced by Dan Brindell and engineered by Nat Wiener. And Tom, our producer Dan, actually before the show was telling us a story about how he had kangaroo in Barcelona. And it led me to ask you if you have any thoughts on expanding to exotic meats at your place.
Not really. I mean, you know, there's like a guy who's raising ostrich out in New Jersey.
Wow. The Fossil Farms guys?
Yeah, Fossil Farms. You know, there's a few people, you know, we might do some, there's also a guy up in Hudson, the Hudson Valley that's doing some, I think he's raising like reindeer or something.
I mean, start with that.
But I mean, ultimately, like, you know, like exotic meats just don't really, I mean, we can special order stuff for people if they really want it. But mm-hmm. I mean, as far as like a sort of like day in, day out kind of thing, we're not really that interested in doing, you know, kind of like exotic or game meats, mostly because they're not, you know, it's very difficult to get local exotic meats. And
so it's safe to say the meat hook is too big for frogs.
Is what?
Too big for frogs.
Yeah, I mean, the thing of it is, like, I don't know, I feel like Chinatown's, like, right across the bridge from us, you know, if people really wanted, buy some live bullfrogs, they can certainly do it. It's New York City, I mean, yeah. It's like, we're trying to focus on what we're good at, which is doing beef, pork, and lamb, and, you know, we're just trying to focus, you know, on doing that and all the value-added things like our, you know, our pastrami and our roast beef and like our pâtés and different charcuterie items. We make a really great mortadella. We make awesome hot dogs.
Yes.
You know, we're more focused on like sausage and that kind of stuff than like branching out into stuff that we're like, ultimately, like, I don't really know that much about like exotic meats. I've never really eaten that much of it. And it would be kind of like, it would be disingenuous, I think, for us to sell them just because like I'm not really that interested in and I don't have that much knowledge about them. And there's so much to learn just about like beef, pork, and lamb, you know, as far as like, you know, what to do with it, like at a butcher shop, but also like how to make sure it's, you know, raised right and, you know, doing all of our custom breeding. Like, we're headed more in that direction than in the direction of like, you know, a wombat or, you know, raising armadillos or something.
Damn it.
Real quick, are you on a farm right now by any chance?
I'm sorry, what?
Are you on a farm right now by any chance? We just thought we heard like a sheep or something in the background.
No, actually, I think that's probably my rattly iPhone, buzzing to tell me that I have yet another fucking email.
Okay, well, I wanted to ask, what's one of your, I mean, we really appreciate, you know, of course, the whole animal usage, but what's your favorite cut to sell?
My favorite cut to sell is, like, the one that gives me, like, the most
profit
satisfaction.
Margin. Oh.
Huh?
Yeah, satisfaction, not profit margin.
Yeah. The most satisfaction is to sell is definitely it's basically a calf muscle off the beef, off the beef shank. It's called the cut in Italian is called the campanella, and it was a cut that you know, one of the friends of the shop like saw when he was in Italy, and you know, we always, you know, we usually take that part and like grind it into ground beef or something like that. But we've actually gotten, we started putting it in the case and over the winter it started selling. And now we have one guy that's coming in this week and he's buying four, which is like basically the campagnolo is off of like all the animals that we've gotten in the past like week and a, you know, week and a few days or whatever. So
just taking them all.
Yeah, I mean, what's so satisfying about it is it's a cut that's completely foreign to Americans. They've never seen it, they don't know what to do with it, and it's fun to really, like, you know, get inside somebody's head and, you know, convince them that what they want is this big, weird-looking, like, sort of, I mean, it looks kind of like a beaver tail with a handle on the end of it, because you take the tendon off as well, and the tendon melts into the braising liquid. It's a braising cut, obviously, and it melts into the braising liquid and gives the consistency of the braising liquid a very, like, velvety, you know, creamy consistency, and it's, you know, it's a great cut, and we really like selling that one.
Yeah, and and also, well, at the same time, you know, I've been in there. You guys are at the counter, and right behind you, you've got two stainless steel tables. You're breaking down the animals right there. You get to interact with your customers. Are they learning more about the different kinds of cuts they can be buying by interacting directly with the butcher?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we have people that, you know, that come in, you know, Wednesday morning when we get all of our animals, and we have, like, this mountain of, you know, like, whole animals, like, on our breaking tables, and, you know, they'll be like, oh, what's that? Oh, I didn't know you guys, like, got... Like, I didn't know you got tails. We're like, yeah, we get the whole thing in. Like, and, you know, we've had people be like, oh, yeah, like, I want to buy all the tails, you know, or something like, you know, like, what do you guys do with all the skin, you know? And, you know, we've gotten people into, you know, cooking with, like, pig skin, which is, you know, kind of something that's, you know, fairly normal for, you know, South American cultures and
definitely
stuff like that. But
pork rinds.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, in the South, but I mean, like, in the Northeast, like, people are just like, well, what do you do with it? And, like, you know, we're like, well, you can slice it and braise it, and you can make, like a you know, a ragu, and the pork is the pasta kind of a thing, or, you know, the pork skin is the pasta, and, you know, all these different weird things. And yeah, definitely, like, people are more adventurous. And, you know, we get people to just, like, come and, like, you know, stand there and, like, you know, watch us do it because they've never been to a butcher shop where they've been able to see anybody actually cutting up something that was recognizable, you know.
Right. Do you see a lot of people coming in to buy cuts that they want to go home and cure themselves? And then do you offer them any kind of, like, recipe for that or advice?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've had people come in and, like, buy, you know, buy whole, you know, whole bone and skin on, like, hams with a trotter and everything because they want to have a go at, like, making, you know, serrano or prosciutto in their house. We've had people that have been wanting to do, like, country hams. We're actually going to offer a country ham class next. We're going to offer several of them next winter when it's, like, country ham curing time again. I'm sorry, what?
Is there, like, a website someone could go to so they could see your schedule of events and classes?
Yeah, if you go to thebrooklynkitchen.com and click on classes, you have a full listing of all the classes that we're offering. Unfortunately, the butcher shop class schedule is going to go dark for the summer because of grilling season, and we're kind of like getting ourselves in over our head with some offsite events and things of that nature where we'll be selling sausage different places around the city. And
cool.
So,
any places you care to share with us, or are they not?
Nothing right this second. We're still, the contracts are still out.
Cool.
But
well, keep us in the loop so we know where to find you for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
One more question I had. You guys bring in, you know, the whole cow, the whole steer. Do you do a special burger mix? You know, it's all the, you know, the trend here in New York.
Yeah, actually, we just started last week. We started making a burger mix that was kind of making fun of the famous Pat Lafreda Black Diamond or whatever.
Ooh,
it's
the
called.
Black Label.
The Black Label. So we've been doing, we've started doing our own version of the Black Label that we call the Black Hole. And it's basically dry-aged beef short rib that is ground with all the dry-aged trim off of our five-week dry-aged rib and drop loins, and then all of the shank meat that's not the campagnolo that we sold. And we're running that through and giving it a triple fine grind, so it has a very particular consistency, and it's very perfumey. It smells and tastes exactly like the best dry-aged, you know, steak you've ever had, except it's a burger.
Cool. Patrick Martin's actually also asked us on the break to give you a question. He wants to know what foods intrigued you on your trip to Portugal.
What intrigued me? The most intriguing thing that I saw in Portugal, and I didn't actually eat it, I just saw it in the window of a butcher shop, is in Porto. I didn't see it anywhere else, but in Porto they do a cured smoked, basically like you would treat a country ham, but it's actually like a partially deboned one side of a pig face.
Wow.
It's basically like a whole cured smoked half pig face with the snout and everything, and those were everywhere. Like they were just hanging, like they were, you know, like they would be hanging in the window, like, you know, braided chilies or something, you know, like just like there'd be like 25 of them on either side, just sort of like all hanging off a rope.
What do they call that?
I have no idea. My Portuguese is so bad. It's embarrassing. I thought, oh, I got this. This is pretty much like Spanish. No, it's not. It's like, no. it's Yeah, it's,
well, do
it's
you remember that face bacon we tried a few weeks back at that Cochon event? Maybe they were doing something like that after the fact.
Yeah, kind of like that, yeah.
It could be, for sure.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. You've been an awesome guest. Anyone who wants to go check out the Meat Hook, they're located at 100 Frost Street in Brooklyn. It's like East Williamsburg area. Definitely, you know, go in, check out the shop, see what they've got to offer. It's a beautiful space. You know, hopefully after the summer when they're not too busy, you'll be able to, you know, do some of their classes.
Yeah, and in case you're not familiar with the Meat Hook, just to give you an idea, this is the only place I think you can go buy a bacon cheeseburger sausage at. So
that is an absolute truth. Yeah. Yes, it is.
So definitely go check it out. Tom, thanks so much, man, for being on.
Yeah, we'd love to have you again.
Thank you, guys.
Cool. We'll be back next week on The Farm Report, as usual, live at 5.
And tomorrow, if you're in Virginia, Heather from Heritage will be down at Radford University celebrating Earth Day.
Signing autographs?
No, but just serving up some of S. Wallace Edgerton's son's Suriano ham and Berkshire sausage.
Hell
so see you in Virginia tomorrow. I'm back here next Wednesday live at 5.
Peace.